From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 460, Update Management Using IBM Big Fix with guest Andrew Lawrence. Recorded Friday, February 5th, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Andrew Lawrence. Andrew Lawrence is a systems analyst and sysadmin at the University of California, Irvine. Across his career, he's been the Mac guy, sysadmin for Linux and Solaris, operated an enterprise calendaring system, managed a team of Windows server administrators, provided frontline support for laptop-toting graduate students, and ridden herd on too many enterprise software installations and IT tools to name. He is always interested in the pragmatic use of useful tools. Welcome, sir.
Good morning. How are you? Pleasure to be here.
I am great. And I'm experimenting with a new piece in Run As, where I give away a Run As Radio mug to a listener. And I'd love if you participate in this just a little bit.
You know, I'm not sure if I can do that given my employer.
Well, I'm going to give away the mug. I'd just like you to listen and feel free to comment.
I will enjoy from a distance.
Absolutely. So this is from show 453, one I did with Mark Manassi. We talked about this idea of the future of Windows being Windows as a service. And we specifically talked about the whole experience with Windows 10 and their rapid updates. And Brett Slasky made this comment. He said, "This is another great show with Mark. I wanted to share my most memorable insider update." So this is when you signed up for the early updates in the slow ring and fast ring. "It was before the official launch of Windows 10, though not too far before, and the update broke Hyper-V. I mean, just plain broke it. It was a sad time when none of my current VMs would start up correctly. At least it was fixed again in about 4 weeks. Plus, I believe how I got around it at the time was I rolled back the update by getting off the fast track of updates." So, you know, this was the challenge back then. If you were on the fast track, you were getting the latest bits. But big things broke, including stuff as big as Hyper-V. And, you know, this is why we don't make beta software on critical machines. I'm glad it just didn't mangle any of your VMs, Brett.
You know, it's funny. We joke about the bleeding edge, but sometimes it cuts deeply.
Yeah. You know what? The side effect of the bleeding edge is you actually bleed.
It is indeed. A few times in my career, I have observed, I've never done it deliberately, but I have observed that you can strike a really good balance between product maturity and features and stability.
Mm-hmm.
By deliberately staying one major release behind.
Yeah. Well, isn't that the old thing of I won't touch any product until the service pack comes out for it, that kind of thing?
Well, even then, I mean, take it a step farther, right? So Exchange 2016 is the current hotness in Exchange right now.
Yes.
But it's still a very, very young product.
They don't have a migration strategy from Exchange 2013 to 2016 yet.
Exactly. And if I remember correctly, that was the case during the early days of 2013 as well.
Absolutely.
So 2016 is out right now, and maybe even when the migration strategy comes out, you might be tempted. But consider you're still using a really young product, and it's going to be, you know, they move these in 3-year, I believe, product cycles.
Something like that, yeah.
There's an argument to be made that you have a higher degree of operational stability if you were to stay on 2013 right now. Moreover, let's go back a cycle even. There's an argument to be made that if you were on 2010 right now, now that 2013 has reached the end of its cycle,
yep,
this is a great time to upgrade to 2013
because
all those migration nightmares have been worked out by now.
Yeah, I'm not going to, I would not argue with that at all. Hey, let me just close out with Brett here, because Brett, thank you so much for your comment. A Run As Radio mug is on its way to you. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or via any of the social media postings. I post every show to Facebook, Google Plus, and LinkedIn. And if you comment there and I read it on the show, I'll send you a mug. I run my own Exchange server because deep down I hate myself. And I was running a 2010 Instant VM and a 2013 VM for quite a while because I just wasn't entirely happy. And it's only when 2016 started shipping that I finally finished the migration 2010. And all I did was turn off the VM, right? I mean, I did the complete uninstall, properly cleared it out, and then shut down the VM. And that's sort of a big moment, you know, when that VM is actually stopped and there's no crisis.
Oh, it is. I remember many times that I've always had when I've retired a thing. There's a feeling of sadness, of separation.
I always hated that VM.
And sometimes, you know, we've even had a toasting ceremony that this lovely piece served us well for many years, but we send it off into the great digital beyond.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. But it's also, it's a part of running a thing. It's part of our lives. It's part of my waking thoughts. It's in many ways, you know, the attachment to it and the attachment to its well-being is not unlike that with, I think, a parent to a child. Naturally, my children are more important.
You would hope.
But I feel we have that same kind of emotional attachment.
Well, you know, that Exchange 2010 VM, its name was Dougie, by the way.
Very nice.
So very much more, my naming strategy for all my personal, my VMs on my data center at home are South Park characters.
Very nice.
So.
I tend to name my personal computers after locations in Springsteen songs.
There you go. That's great. That's an awesome idea. Naming is hard. What a tough problem. But you know, and the reality that I know the names of these VMs just speaks to they're still pets, not cattle.
Oh, exactly. Although, have you heard? There's a joke I saw on the internet that. Let me think. What was? Oh yeah, a junior admin names systems out of Dune characters,
right.
Star Wars characters, something like that. A senior sysadmin names them after the nearest airport code and a 3-digit integer.
Yep, I get
and,
that.
And although I dislike the implication of the use junior and senior, which implies foolish or wise,
right.
But you definitely approach things differently when you are dealing in volume.
Well, and I mean, looking at your bio, and I obviously read a very short version of it, like you're not particular to your operating system. You've been all over the map here.
You know, I have a really lousy elevator description of my job.
Really?
Yeah, because I've had the very good fortune of working at a place that believes in and fosters personal growth, technological growth, allows me to wander off into interesting corners and do different things. I've wound up working on a number of platforms, doing something that was interesting here, and then that became important, so that was my focus for a while. And over the years, I've developed an opinion that, I truly am interested in the right tool for this job.
Hmm. And I also feel like there's no one way to solve any given problem either. Like often the tools that we're familiar with have an advantage because we'll move faster with them. But right is such a vague concept.
It really is. Just a case example that happened the other day. We are talking about moving a repository file server from one Windows domain to another Windows domain, and we realized that it holds scripts that are rather critical in a variety of contexts, and it would be really horrible if the scripts referenced it under its short name that might go awry when it moves domains. And we thought, well, we need to crawl those scripts very quickly and make sure all the references are using an FQDN. How can we do that? And I fumbled around for a couple of minutes thinking, well, I could do this in PowerShell and do something like that, or I could use UltraEdit or Notepad++. And I don't offhand remember if they can easily do multi-file recursive searches, but I know what can, which is BBEdit on a Mac.
That is not the sexiest solution out of the list there.
No, it's not, but it took about 4 minutes.
Right. And honestly, you could spend more time on the debate than that.
And I spent more time on the debate in my head.
Nice. This is the nature of engineering. You know, the other place where I see this happen often, and you're a California guy. I've run into this in New Jersey, too. There's so many highways that when someone asks you for directions to a place, you struggle to pick a route because there's so many route options.
Oh, absolutely.
And none of them go directly where the person wants to go. It's just degrees of distance away.
and it depends on time of day. Yeah. And
it is actually an interesting engineering problem.
It really is. I grew up south of here in San Diego, and in San Diego, there's quite a bit fewer freeways, and you refer to them by the number. I'm going to take 8 to 163 to get to whatever. Whereas the LA-ism is to refer to freeways as the something.
Right.
I'm going to take the 405 to the 22 to the 5 to the 101. and I've lived here long enough now that my language has flipped. And what I've learned is referring to freeways as the is a very sticky thing. Once you run across it, it's hard to get rid of it.
Right. So these days, it sounds like you're responsible for maintaining the state of an awful lot of desktop and mobile devices. Can you talk to me a bit about that?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I function these days mainly as a system administrator for our desktop support unit, doing endpoint management. So the team uses a product from IBM they bought a few years ago called Big Fix, which replaced a prior product that they used. And we use that to support a few thousand different endpoints, mostly Windows, some OS X.
Nice.
That's the platform we use for patching and maintaining currency on our systems.
Now, why not Windows update services?
That's an artifact more of the team's history, I think, although we have considered the Microsoft products at a few different points.
Mm-hmm.
The prior products is well gone, so we don't need to talk about that. But at the time they were considering switching, they did look at the System Center platform, although I don't recall the name it had at the time. And
it was Microsoft MOM, right? Operations?
I think it was MOM.
Yeah. And I always thought, Microsoft MOM, where do you think you're going today?
Yeah. And the key point is that at that time, the team was largely self-supporting, and the team, of course, had the perceptions that came from the product they had before that.
Right.
And so your perceptions are, well, we're used to doing these things in this way, and we know, of course, patching is incredibly integral to what we do, so we need to fastly be able to do that. We need to be able to respond to calls in such and such a way, and we have these kinds of expectations about exposure, what we see in the console and the tools that we use. As they went through that evaluation, what they found was that they were very keen on this particular product. And they also wanted to see there were some key features that were just really not available in the MOM platform as it existed at that time.
Right. And this is a time when Big Fix was not an IBM product.
That's correct. Matter of fact, if I remember correctly, they started looking at it before the acquisition, and then we got into it after the acquisition.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Which had more to do with the two companies' business arrangements than anything else. Meanwhile, I was not actually involved in this decision process.
Right.
I was in another team. I sat in on a couple of the early meetings and asked a couple of reasonable questions about it. But I was not critical path to the decision at all. And then time rolled forward a few years later. We had, at that time, now a working installation, and then it came under my purview to operate on a daily basis and also see about improving some of the processes that we used.
So it was working, but they weren't entirely happy with it?
Yeah, we had it running for a while, but there was in general a sort of a malaise of attitude. We had an idea that yes, it was working, but it wasn't working as easily we thought as it should be.
I mean, part of that's got to be if you're going through an acquisition and so forth. Like it was going to be incorporated into the Tivoli suite, right?
Well, yeah, that's its own story.
Okay.
Because I had not been, I brought kind of an outsider's perspective
sure.
into the problem set because I was not previously in the team and I was also not previously in the decision path. what wound up happening was I looked at it and I was able to, I got this idea that, okay, well, it seems like the product wants to work like this, mm-hmm. but we're trying to use it the way we used the old product.
Interesting. So because you didn't have that engagement with the old product, you don't have those scars, that sort of, you know, set of processes that you've learned before. So you can sort of look at the product differently.
Exactly. And so, thankfully the team was open to these kinds of these radical ideas that I had about it, about, more streamlined ways to use it. Mm-hmm. And in the process over that time, I've actually become very, very impressed with the product. I feel it is a great asset to us. One thing I've been really impressed by is that as our support base has grown in numbers, increment labor does not increase to support those numbers.
So it's not harder for you guys to handle these larger and larger numbers because UFC Irvine's growing clearly.
We are, yes. And I should point out that my team does not support all the systems at the university. Sure. We support a certain scope of systems that are supported by our unit, although that number is in the thousands.
It's a lot of machines.
Well,
but I think it's a very interesting philosophical statement here, too, that there is this idea of not the current process you have to do updates, but more we need to do updates. We need new when you keep machines up to date. When you're looking at a new product, you've got to kind of step back and say, so how do you suggest that we manage updates and then see, you know, could you adopt that lifestyle, essentially?
Exactly. One of the things I've come to view, you know, update management, endpoint management, particularly when it comes to patching, is you are endlessly marching toward a goal that you never reach, which is perfection.
Yeah. But that's our whole industry, my friend. Like that's,
It is
a mastery industry. No song is ever perfect. No piece of software is ever finished.
Exactly. You know, we are always trying to reach the state where all of my systems are completely up to date, and that is practically unachievable.
Yeah. You just got to embrace it.
Yeah. And what I've really liked about the way the product operates is that it is both it's both content management, scripting and programming. It's a job manager. It's also a service in that the vendor provides for me patch content and some application deployment content, depends on the thing. That just rolls into my system as it becomes available. They have armies of people that, that slurp the newest Microsoft patches or Flash or whatever, into the system, and my system downloads that stuff.
That's really cool. Give me one second here to pay the bills because Run As Radio is brought to you by UpGuard, formerly known as ScriptRock. UpGuard pinpoints configuration drift wherever it incurs in your environment, no matter the platform, and alerts you to unexpected changes happening on any machine. Vulnerability scanning and PowerShell DSC support come standard, and the latest iteration of UpGuard is the only platform that gives you a C-Star, that's Cybersecurity Threat Assessment Report. A FICO-like score for your cyber risk. Try it free at upguard.com/runasradio. Now tell me you are not on the Patch Tuesday cadence then. So Microsoft updates don't hit your machines.
That is correct.
That's really interesting.
So our managed environment is such that although my systems are enrolled in a SCOM setup,
right.
The only thing we do that for is endpoint protection.
Mm-hmm.
The actual patch cycle, maintenance cycle happens in our Big Fix environment. And so the way our cycle rolls is, Patch Tuesday happens. We see content from the vendor, usually within 24 hours. Particularly when it comes to Patch Tuesday and security updates,
right.
those are the most prompt.
And yeah, those are the time sensitive ones when it's an exploit.
Exactly. So those become available immediately. We have a standard weekly cycle. Actually, it's more frequently than weekly if there's an egregious 0 day. But and then we have a standard process where the content gets rolled into the next batch.
Mm-hmm.
The batch gets applied on a staging cycle to a small set of folks and then everyone else a little bit later on.
So you do have like some field beta testers?
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Yeah. And we have standing windows where your machine, we are always releasing content during these windows. Your individual machine may or may not get content if it needs it. Mm-hmm. Your machine may or may not reboot as a consequence of that. And there's a communication plan that rolls forward on the whole thing as well.
And it's on a weekly cadence?
Yes.
Okay. That's the rate that patches come out these days.
Yeah, it really is, and often more than that. You know, we've certainly seen weeks where there were multiple flashes in a week and whatnot.
Right.
That's the world we live in, and we've become able, I'm proud of the fact that we've become able to accommodate that.
Well, and this is, you know, yeah. Breach protection is not a small thing. Like, it is very challenging to keep up with that.
Indeed. But as I've worked with the product, one of the things I've become very, very, appreciative of is that it's an agent that runs on the system.
Mm-hmm.
It is a job processor. So when content is in the server, the endpoint evaluates the content, decides whether or not it is relevant for me, and then it processes it if it's supposed to. But on every platform the agent is available on, it takes advantage of the fact that it runs as a service and that it has access to whatever APIs or shell are on that platform.
Cool.
If the agent is running on an OS X system, well, mm-hmm. this is a Unix machine and I have root and I have a bash shell. And so you can, In Big Fix itself, you can write and specify content that takes advantage of whatever is available on the agent platform.
And so are you updating your servers this way as well, or is this just a desktop solution?
We are using it mostly for desktops.
Okay. I see as normal, right? It's like server management and desktop management are different creatures.
They are. There's certainly different use cases. We happen to have them in a separate team. I mm-hmm. think that's also somewhat normal for a lot of places. The product can do servers. They have a whole component that allows you to orchestrate multi-phase, multi-system cycles, which is really keen. I'm actually kind of eager to use it.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting. And just, you know, thinking about this more thoroughly, I think that the thing that's different with desktops is that they are changing all of the time. There is so much pressure on different, you know, it's almost impossible to stop Chrome from updating, you know.
Oh, indeed. I think there's a thing you can do to turn off the Chrome update service.
Right.
That also means that if I do that, I am taking on the task of updating this thing.
And now you own the Chrome updates. Enjoy.
Yeah. And so on the one, and this is something that when I talk to my peers, we all wrestle over and everyone makes their own decision. But the same thing with Flash, same thing with Firefox. A lot of these, you know, the popular applications have come around to doing self-updating mm-hmm. lately. And on the one hand, that's great for individual user. They're always up to date and all the time. From a business standpoint, we like to own the change control. On the other hand, if you own the change control on something that aggressively updates all the time, you're also owning the gap between the availability right. of a change and then when you actually apply the change.
And I appreciate that you're not an absolutist. It's like if you own the update, you own all the updates.
Yeah, and you also own the risk.
Right. And this is a balancing act of risk. What is the risk of a bad Chrome update to our organization versus the responsibility of managing all the Chrome updates so that we could possibly catch that bad Chrome update?
Indeed. And of course, the different vendors deal with it differently, mm-hmm. of course. But usually, like for instance, Firefox off the top of my head.
Yep.
Firefox typically does, they do bug fix security fix releases all the time.
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever opened Firefox and not have it update something.
Yeah, exactly. and so, for instance, they released 44.0 in the last, I don't know, week or so.
Mm-hmm.
But the integer updates are feature changes of one variety or another. Yep. And they have a cadence for those. I think they're 6 weeks or 2 months. I'm really not sure. But they do security updates that are dot revision something, all the time as needed, as any responsible vendor should. And so, well, gee, if it's a, I need to ask myself the question, do I let the updates run all the time? Because a feature change might injure my users.
Yep, might break something. And you're taking on the time. They're going to call you, not Mozilla. So if something does break.
Yeah. So on the one hand, you want to be, from a security perspective, I would like to have security updates security updates go out extremely quickly.
Yes.
All the time. And feature updates maybe keep the brakes on and run through a more rigorous internal test cycle. But achieving that ideal is always a challenge.
Yeah, and it depends on the app. I mean, I'm just not that concerned about browsers breaking. You know, I think it's a good example of one you want to let loose, where app updates, you know, more complicated and more costly apps, you might be a bit more suspicious. Changing your version of Office, not a small thing to do.
Not at all. No, that's a major platform change right there. Office is a platform.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that business logic flows through, you got to be really careful about that.
Yeah, and that's our responsibility as operators.
Indeed.
So that makes sense to me, but I think it's a really interesting line to go down of what you're going to allow the user to update or allow to auto update versus what you're going to manage.
Yeah, and ultimately I believe there isn't a right answer or a wrong answer. There's simply the answer you choose because it makes sense for myself and my customers. Mm-hmm.
And that you've surfaced that level of risk and expectation to the rest of the organization.
Indeed. And we have those conversations with management and with the security team that, okay, we're thinking about making this change to our operations because of this, and we think it's going to have this kind of impact. Is everybody comfortable with that? Is anybody uncomfortable with that? And that's part of the conversation, and we just move forward.
And clearly you have Windows desktops and OS X desktops. Any others? Do you actually have some like Ubuntu desktops in the organization?
Not in my support base.
Right.
I have a small number of Linux servers that are part of my BigFix installation. They're actually a functional part of the infrastructure.
Oh, interesting.
The product supports, it has agents for Solaris, a handful of Linux varieties. But my support base is Windows and OS X.
But just having a common console for managing all the updates for Macs and for Windows machines, because I got to think in your environment, there are probably a pretty good mix of both.
There are, really. And that mix is changing. The OS X platform keeps growing. Mm-hmm. It keeps growing additionally. I think there's a lot of market forces you could talk to with about that, but that's somewhat less interesting. One of the things that's interesting is as the OS X platform has grown in a business perspective, you know, it a long time ago, if Apple products were being used in a business, it was maybe over in the marketing department and those crazy artists will let them take care of their
own stuff. It used to be an art tool.
Yeah. And maybe if you had a lot of them, you would go hire a Mac guy to come take care of it.
And they almost had no administration solutions back in those days too. Like it was really hard to administrate a group of Macs.
Well, it depends on how far back you go. There have always been solutions of one variety or another.
Right.
But the scope and capabilities has changed over time.
For sure.
And then we wound up in this case where you often had the central IT group who knows what they know, Windows or Unix or whatever. And then you had the Mac group with the Mac guy. And that person probably really knows the Apple perspective on things, but you very rarely wind up where there's a cross sharing of knowledge between the two, and this is, I think, a new category we're seeing in the IT space, not a new category, a growing category, where you have a person who has the scale IT perspective and intimate knowledge of OS X as a client agent platform. Mm. Because there are lots of facilities in the OS that you can use to apply management business logic and centralize management and achieve those goals. I think where IT folks as platform people, very often IT folks adopt the identity of the platform they're most familiar with.
Right.
and they say, yeah, well, I'm in IT and we use group policy. Therefore, group policy is the answer to all my woes.
Right. And anything that won't do group policy is no good.
Right. You know, I can't manage it.
Yes.
And that statement comes from the fact that I can't use group policy on that.
Right.
That doesn't mean you can't manage
it. Those two things are not the same.
Yes, exactly. You know, to follow that example, group policy is a mechanism through which we can apply management and business logic mm-hmm. to a set of endpoints. And so if the endpoint platform has management facilities, and they nearly all do of one variety or another, you can apply business logic to them, maybe with a different tool set, maybe
yeah.
with a different interface.
I immediately start thinking of products like Mass 360 as well.
Mass 360, that's in the category of mobile device management.
Right.
And that's, which is a, it's not a new category. It's become a robust category in the last few years.
But it was definitely one where we weren't going to get group policy for it, so you better come up with a solution.
Exactly, right. And you can look at, there's Microsoft Intune, there's AirWatch, lots of other things. If you go back in time, there was Bez with BlackBerry. There was Good Technology that came in early.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's a whole broad category. And that's even grown into desktop Windows. Windows 8, Windows 10 both have... Windows 10 certainly has a built-in MDM agent that it can be managed by one of these MDM-type platforms, not necessarily by an enterprise platform, which is just a fascinating thing to watch happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like we're still groping around trying to figure out how are we going to do this overall management strategy as the platforms continue to shift. You know, for a while there, we thought iPads were going to be everything, but it seems to have subsided. And now the diversity of devices is only getting bigger.
Well, I think the biggest shift that we're seeing is it's a shift away from the old. I think the model and the thinking which is becoming outmoded is that the business systems are inside the business. They're inside the building. They're on our network. They're on my domain. I have group policies for them.
They're the business's machines.
The business's machines,
right.
Yeah. And then there are personal devices which are not attached, and they travel around. They mm-hmm. go to client sites. They come back and forth. And what we're seeing is that the individual and physically mobile devices are displacing or have a higher degree of utility than the internal devices in the old way of thinking.
Right. Well, and I got to think in a university setting especially, there's a lot of bring your own device going on there.
Oh, absolutely. For a university, the answer to the – in a university, if the question is posed, what do you support, the answer is yes. Because in one way or another, in one context or another, it does touch our system.
Sure.
It could be just email. It could be just the Wi-Fi system. But
yeah, you're going
just
to,
about everything.
You have to tolerate these external products coming in one form or another. It's just a question of how far you go.
Exactly.
I can't imagine you're patching third-party devices, though. Like the machines that you're responsible for update on, these are owned by the university, I would presume.
For my team, yes.
Right.
For my team, what you said is just the case. My team patches the systems that we own and we support on behalf of our supported clients.
Right.
I am aware of other higher ed institutions that have a different scope. Their counterparts to my team have a different scope. And they basically, if the machine touches their network or touches their campus, their agent is on it and they patch the thing.
Yeah.
Every installation is different.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the rules change from place to place.
We talked about mobile device management a minute ago. We have an installation of an MDM product. We manage a lot of mobile devices with it. Most of it happens to be iOS. We've also got some certainly some Android as well.
And we're seeing
growth with that with actually OS X because it has a lot of MDM facilities in there. And we're getting inquiries from some of the teams about Windows 10 with that.
Interesting. Yeah, and again, this landscape has to evolve, and you need to evolve with it.
Yeah, and again, it's all a matter of you know, I want to track my inventory. I want to know where the thing is. Yep. I need to apply some degree of business logic to meet our accepted use minimums for, at the very least, screensaver policies and password length and whatever else I need to do. And when the VIP walks into the conference room on the first floor, I want to make sure that they have the right printer.
Right. Just that simply works. It turns out to be harder than it seems.
You know, after 35, 40 years of personal computers, I'm astounded that printing is still incredibly hard.
Dude, that's a whole other show. I think we need to stop. I would gladly do that show with you, but we should do it another day. Andrew Lawrence, thanks so much for chatting with me about IBM Big Fix. It's really neat to see a different approach to patch management. I appreciate your time.
Oh, very much. We didn't even get into the niggly operational details.
Yeah, there's more to know for sure.
For sure. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.